Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
You're listening to Alessandro Morisecchi singing Ave Maria. He's frequently cited as the last castrato. A castrato was a centuries-old practice of castrating vocally talented boys well before puberty. The child was mutilated by doctors, so the larynx wouldn't be transformed by normal physiological events of puberty. Women were banned from singing in the Catholic Church, so young boys were castrated in their place. The boys were given a warm bath, drugged with opium, and then their necks were squeezed until they passed out. From there, their testicles were either removed entirely, or the correct blood vessels were simply slashed. Some boys even died during the castration process. Eventually, after much criticism, castrato were reasonably banned from the Catholic Church. But let's say there was a supposed accident. If a child allegedly fell and their testicles were injured, or perhaps they got a hernia, then the church would happily accept new castrati into their fold with open arms. These new children were operated on much the same way, of course. With the diminishing numbers of castrati on hand, became a valuable trade. The boys fell out of singing, they were accepted into the church as priests. They needed that work, because they wouldn't be accepted elsewhere. There were a number of physiological effects that came with the territory. Not only were they unusually tall, due to the growth plates in their legs not fusing shut, but they had large breasts, buttocks, and developed osteoporosis. Beyond that, they usually had a childlike facial appearance. Alessandro Morosecchi supposedly grew resentful of his status as a castrato. It destroyed his marriage. He wasn't able to conceive, and his wife, after realizing that she wanted children, left him for another man. And since he was the last of his kind, he must have felt alone in the world towards the end. At age 63, he died of pneumonia. In 1991, Juan Carlos Chavez arrived in South Florida, floating on a raft from Cuba. He was with two others. His history is something of a mystery, though he did admit at least once that as a child he was sexually abused by a relative in Cuba. A childhood friend, Pedro Cabello, later stated that Chavez never talked about politics, complained about the Cuban government, or expressed any dissatisfaction with it. It appears that he may have come to the United States solely for the opportunity it presented. In 1995, Juan Carlos Chavez was living in a trailer on a property owned by Susan Shinehouse. Chavez worked as a handyman for the Shinehouse family and was permitted to use their Ford pickup truck to run errands or do other work for the family. As part of his duties, Chavez frequently cared for horses owned by the Shinehouse family, but housed on property owned by David Santana, which contained an avocado grove. There was also a trailer on the property, referred to throughout Chavez's future trial as the Avocado Grove Trailer, or the Horse Farm Trailer. On September 11, 1995, Chavez went to Home Depot in the Ford pickup to pick up supplies. He leaves the store at 3 p.m. and starts his ride home. Chavez spots some young children playing in water, particularly some young boys playing in their underwear. They catch his interest. After getting enough of a look at the children, Chavez drives off. But he can't help himself. He couldn't get these kids out of his head. So he returns a short while later to get another view. At the same time, 9-year-old Samuel James Jimmy Rice is getting dropped off from his school bus at approximately 3:07 p.m. at a bus stop near his home in the Redlands, a rural area of South Miami-Dade County. Jimmy is walking on the left side of the road. He has a short distance before he gets home. Chavez spots Jimmy. His mind is all flashing images of prepubescent boys playing in water. But this boy is alone. No one is around. Chavez turns the Ford pickup around. He stops right in front of Jimmy's path, the nose of the truck facing the 9-year-old. Jimmy stops dead in his tracks. Chavez climbs out of the cab of the truck. He pulls out a .38 caliber pistol he's stolen from Mrs. Shinehouse. Chavez points the gun at the child and asks him if he wants to die. Jimmy responds that he doesn't. Chavez tells him to get in the truck. Afraid and alone, Jimmy does as the scary man says. He removes his backpack and puts it between his legs. Chavez climbs into the truck with Jimmy, still holding the handgun. He places the revolver underneath his lap, tells Jimmy to put his head down so he wouldn't be seen by anyone. They drive back to the horse ranch. At the ranch, Jimmy leaves his backpack inside the pickup truck. Chavez directs him to the trailer that's located inside the horse ranch. Once inside, he tells the boy to sit down on the bed. Jimmy complies. Chavez takes a seat on a black office chair close by. He places himself between the child and the entrance of the trailer. Here he begins to talk to the boy. He notices that Jimmy is nervous. Chavez asks why he's scared. The child begins sobbing Jimmy asked why Chavez has brought him here. Why did he take him? Chavez responds with a question. He asks the trembling child, "Why do you think I took you?" Jimmy doesn't answer. There's a pause. Something hanging in the air. And then Chavez tells the child to remove his clothes. Jimmy removes his shirt. Chavez tells him to remove the rest. The boy strips down to his underwear. Chavez tells him to go lay in his bed. The boy complies. Chavez enters the nearby bathroom area of the trailer looking for something. Digging around, he finds a see-through plastic container with blue lettering on it. He rubs some of the contents of that container on his fingers to see if it would burn. It didn't. He goes back to where the boy is, and he begins rubbing the unknown substance to Jimmy's rectum. Jimmy asks what he's doing. Chavez responds, "What do you think I'm doing?" Jimmy asks, "What are you going to do?" Chavez responds, "What do you think I'm going to do?" Listener, if you're sensitive to this kind of thing and you don't want to know facts straight out of the case file, I understand. Now's your cue to skip ahead. The man unzips his pants and he rapes the 9-year-old boy. He will later admit in an interrogation that he imagined the boys in their underwear playing in water. He sees those boys in the canal, the image of them in his mind, and he ejaculates. Chavez and Jimmy get dressed and leave in the truck. He intends to leave Jimmy in the area where he picked him up. However, upon nearing the area where he had abducted Jimmy, Chavez notices that police cars are present. Believing that someone reported Jimmy missing, that they were looking for the boy, Chavez keeps Jimmy's head down in the truck, and they return to the horse farm. Chavez is noticeably agitated on the way back. Once inside the trailer, Jimmy is trembling and crying, and he asks, "What's going to happen to me? Are you going to kill me?" Chavez is in a panic and maybe paranoid. He hears a helicopter fly over the horse ranch. He believes the helicopter belongs to the police, that the police are searching for the child. When he hears the helicopter flying over him, he pulls Jimmy close to him so he can't go anywhere. And eventually, he hears the chopper several times flying over him. Chavez gets up and scurries to the window, looking out to see if he could see the chopper. Despite how loud the helicopter is, Chavez can't seem to find it. No matter how hard he looks, he never seems to spot it overhead, but he knows it's there. While he's looking for the helicopter, Jimmy starts inching to the front entrance of the trailer. He gets closer. The man is still looking out the window, looking in vain for the helicopter. This is his chance. Without warning, he makes a dash for the door, and the kid is fast. Chavez loses grip on the 9-year-old. He starts running for the boy, but the man seemingly gets tangled up on something left on the floor. He falls over and he can't get it off. Jimmy gets to the door. He starts turning the handle and begins to pull. At the same time, Chavez is righting himself. He pulls the .38 revolver up. He aims it and he fires. The boy screams out and collapses in front of the door. Chavez runs over to the boy, rolls him over. Jimmy Rice is staring into his eyes. He takes a breath, exhales it, and then dies. Chavez places Jimmy's body in a metal barrel. He found the barrel abandoned at the horse farm. He transports the barrel containing the child's body from the horse farm to the Shine House residence, where he removes the barrel and places it in his disabled van, which is parked in the stable area. Chavez removes Jimmy's book bag from the pickup and carries it with him to his own trailer. That night, Chavez looks at some of the notepads inside Jimmy's book bag. He notices blood on his own clothing and eventually destroys the clothes. During the night and into the next morning, all he can think about is what he's going to do with Jimmy's body. 2 or 3 days later, Chavez attempts to use a backhoe on the Shinehouse property to dig a hole in which to bury Jimmy. But the machine won't operate properly. Chavez remains concerned, particularly when he notices that the lid of the barrel, which contained Jimmy's body, had come off. Chavez pulls Jimmy's body from the barrel onto a piece of plywood, and from there, his remains fall to the ground. Chavez gets a saw and begins to dismember Jimmy's body with the use of the tool. It took Chavez a while to fully dismember the body, as he kept getting sick and vomiting. He places 3 of Jimmy's parts in 3 planters, then goes into the stable area, and he locates some cement bags. With the cement, Chavez fills and tops the planters with it. In December of that year, Miss Shinehouse begins to suspect that Chavez was stealing from her. She started to notice that the jewelry and other items of value were starting to go missing. But what was most alarming was that her .38 revolver was gone. This placed her in a position where Shinehouse didn't want to confront the man directly. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventure, and the challenges she overcame. The book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Personally, I love My Life in a Book. I tried it with my mom, and I've heard stories I'd never heard before because, you know, they just never came up naturally in conversation. It's easy to use, and my favorite part is it's given me more of an excuse to talk to my mom more. You know, it's not always easy to come up with those on your own. Listener, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code Obscura at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code Obscura for 10% off today. Finally, she resolved to obtain the evidence herself with the help of a locksmith. And on December 5th, 1995, while Chavez was away for the day, Mrs. Shinehouse and her son, Edward, entered the trailer located on her property, which Chavez occupied. She found the handgun, which she later identified in court as a gun she had purchased in April of 1989, in plain view on a counter opposite the trailer door. As Miss Shinehouse continued to look inside the trailer, she discovered in the closet area a book bag which was partially open. Looking inside the bag, she saw papers and books. The works appeared to be in a child's handwriting, and she noticed a name. She also observed this name on one of the books. When Mrs. Shinehouse asked her son to look at the items, he also recognized the child's name, Jimmy Rice. As a result of this discovery, Mrs. Shinehouse notified the FBI. When Chavez returned to the Shinehouse residence at about 7:15 on the evening of December 6, armed FBI agents quickly surrounded and secured him. After being patted down, he agreed to go with the Metro Dade police officers, who were also present, to the station for questioning. Chavez was involved in a questioning process that was punctuated by regular refreshment, food, bathroom breaks, and a rest period. and interspersed with two outings returning to the Shinehouse and Santana properties in southern Miami-Dade County. Although Chavez was first brought to the police station on the night of December 6th, he did not sleep until shortly after midnight on December 7th. The questioning was allegedly a grueling 55 hours. Detective Luis, who was bilingual, conducted most of the questioning, although other officers also participated. Various police detectives, an FBI agent, Mrs. Shinehouse, and an independent interpreter, all had opportunities to observe Chavez at various times throughout this period. Chavez was consistently described as alert and articulate during this time, and no one observed police detectives mistreating Chavez in any way throughout the period of questioning. Over the course of the interrogation, and after having been repeatedly advised of his Miranda rights and knowingly waiving them, Chavez provided several versions of his involvement in Jimmy's disappearance. As law enforcement officers engaged in various versions of Chavez's changing narratives, he agreed to accompany officers on two occasions to visit the horse farm property and the Shinehouse property, where he showed them the location of the events he had recounted had transpired. Chavez was asked to reveal where the boys' remains were located to permit Jimmy's family to have closure. After the physical evidence totally discredited each version of events which Chavez had initially proposed, Chavez agreed to tell the truth. However, Chavez explained that before he would disclose the location of Jimmy's remains, he wanted the officers to guarantee that he would receive the death penalty. Chavez was told he could not be guaranteed that the death penalty would be imposed. However, Chavez continued to talk, asserting that the events would not have happened had he not been abused by a relative in Cuba. The lead detective told Chavez that he, quote, felt that it was time for him to be truthful and tell them what really happened to Jimmy. Chavez then went to the restroom for another break, and upon returning to the interview room, informed the officers that they were now going to hear the truth. What do you want to know? I'll tell you what happened to Jimmy Rice. Chavez proceeded to admit to detectives that he had abducted Jimmy at gunpoint, traveled to the horse ranch, and sexually assaulted Jimmy before finally shooting him. Detectives explained that they needed details from Chavez and requested permission to take a sworn statement. Chavez gave it. In the fall of 1998, Chavez was convicted of kidnapping, sexual battery, and capital murder. He was sentenced to death. The Florida Supreme Court confirmed his conviction and sentence on November 21, 2002. According to WUFT, Chavez spent his last days housed in a death watch cell, measuring 12 feet long, 7 feet wide, and 8.5 feet high, in the Florida State Prison near Stark, Florida. By request, Chavez's last meal included a ribeye steak, fries, hot sauce, a mix of mangoes, bananas, and papayas, strawberry ice cream, and mango juice. Following the meal from noon to about 2:30 p.m., inmates may receive a visit from a religious advisor at his or her cell front. Chavez spoke with a Catholic spiritual advisor.
The final chapter in one of the nation's most gripping cases involving violent crimes against children is almost here. Convicted killer Juan Carlos Chavez will be put to death. Tonight, West 2's Greg Fox has emotional reaction from the father of victim Jimmy Rice and how the law bearing his name could be changed to protect others from predators.
So say we all, dated at Orlando, Orange County, Florida.
The long road to punishment for Juan Carlos Chavez began in Orange County, the tearful father of his victim watching when a jury in 98 convicted Chavez.
You know, we've suffered a terrible loss. A loss that you don't wish on anyone.
Now, Don Rice is praising the governor's signature on the death warrant to end Chavez's life next month and offer him some comfort for the brutal murder of his son, 9-year-old Jimmy, in 1995.
If there was ever anyone in the world who deserved to die, it's the man who did that. This is not about seeking revenge. There's a big difference between seeking revenge and seeking justice.
Jimmy's disappearance generated headlines and a widespread search that ended with the discovery of his dismembered body on Chavez's property. In his memory, Florida lawmakers passed the Jimmy Rice Act, which gives the state power to detain sex offenders indefinitely after they've served their sentences. But it's had flaws.
There's going to be another little child on the news with an Amber Alert.
Rain Periwinkle has been urging changes to keep sexual predators locked up since her daughter Cherish was killed last June. Suspect Donald Smith, a convicted kidnapper, was let out despite rules under the Rice Act that should have kept him jailed.
There were red flags.
While lawmakers consider changes to honor Jimmy's life, there will be no freedom for his killer.
The execution itself was delayed 2 hours during the final appeal process. As I'm sure you've heard in other episodes, this isn't uncommon. The U.S. Supreme Court denied the appeal by 7:30 p.m. The execution was ordered to go on. According to the Tampa Bay Times, Chavez's last statement came in a rambling handwritten note penned hours before his death. In it, he made no apologies to the Rice family. A prison official supervising the execution asked Chavez if he wanted to make a final statement. Chavez declined, and the first of three drugs were administered. Within a few minutes, a sedative took effect. Chavez yawned and closed his eyes. At one point, the corrections officer said his name, Mr. Chavez, three times to make sure he was asleep. The official then leaned over Chavez and shut his eyelids. As the lethal components in the injection took effect, Chavez moved his feet slightly. His body lay still for several minutes. A doctor examined Chavez's eyes, nose, and mouth. A stethoscope detected no heartbeat. At 8:17 p.m., the corrections officials declared Chavez's death. Throughout the process, none of the 19 witnesses showed any emotion as he walked from the room with the aid of a cane. However, there was clear pain in Jimmy's father's eyes.
There is no pleasure in watching a man die, even an evil man like Juan Carlos Chavez. And I don't expect to enjoy it in any way, but I have no real pity for the man when I think of how he killed my son the way he did, enjoyed it the way he did, and rebelled in it. And how could I possibly feel any pity for this guy?
Happening today, a final farewell for Don Rice, the father of Jimmy Rice, whose abduction and death gripped the nation 25 years ago. Family and friends are gathering in Kendall for his funeral and burial. The 76-year-old died last week at his home in Vero Beach. Law enforcement with bloodhounds are at the service that is underway right now. Don Rice and the foundation created by him and his wife in Jimmy's honor has provided bloodhounds for police agencies locating missing children, something not available when Jimmy Rice was abducted and murdered. He'll be buried next to Jimmy and his wife, Claudine.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.